In Conversation with Dr. Eve.
Dr. Eve joins me now on the line. Good evening to you, Dr. Eve.
Hi, Aubrey.
Are you well this evening?
I'm from so far away. I'm very far away from you, as you know.
How far are you is far away from me?
I'm in New York.
Ah, that's pretty far. I mean, that is very, very far, Dr. Eve.
Yeah.
Pray tell, what are you doing in New York?
I am away for a number of weeks, working and playing and living my best life as I do frequently in New York.
Yes.
And I'm with my family and beloveds and friends and my life. So combining just, you know, the ideal working away from home.
Dr. Eve?
And
Have yourself a great time in New York, and let them know in New York that we want you back. Just in case they've got any ideas or wanting to keep you there, just let them know that they'll have me to talk to about that.
Let's talk
a little bit about childhood trauma and committed relationships. Tell us about this. Yep.
So I tell you what prompted this originally, and I really kind of struggled and wrestled with myself of how am I going to frame what I'm really thinking and feeling about this. And I'm not embarrassed to say it, but I will admit that a few weeks ago, I got very sucked into watching Love is Blind, this reality show. I don't know if you've ever seen it, Aubrey.
No.
It's a reality TV show on Netflix, which throws people together and gives them, I think, something like a month where they are to chat with each other with a wall between them. They don't ever get to see each other. They fall in love within like 5 days or claim to. They then get thrown into a very exotic location where they are expected to share a bedroom and be sexual. And then they are thrown into an apartment for 3 weeks where they plan a wedding. And on the fourth week, they get married, or they are then taken to the altar, prepare for an entire, very lavish, extravagant wedding. And even at the last moment of this 5-week experiment, they have the opportunity of saying, yes, I do want to marry, or no, I don't. And I found that it's an incredibly cruel process that I would join any petition to have removed, because it undermines the seriousness of love and undermines the seriousness of marriage or commitment. And what it's strong.
Dr. Eve, I'm losing you.
Are you with me? Can you hear me now?
I
hope you can hear me.
I lost 30 seconds of what you were saying, yeah?
Good. So what strikes me as I did watch this show is the desperation of people to be in this institution called marriage, and how there is apparently psychological vetting, but there should be vetting that we all should be doing to really get to know this person who we are committing to, whether it is in a significant long-term relationship or just a significant commitment of some kind, and certainly a commitment of marriage. Because when we look at the history and the statistics around childhood trauma, they're so huge. How can we expect to be married to somebody and not expect that they're going to come in with their own unique set and levels of childhood trauma? And what we're talking about tonight is how this childhood trauma impacts on intimacy, sexuality, relationship vulnerability. It's a non-shaming. We always have a non-shaming space, Aubrey, but it's a non-shaming, non-judgmental conversation. I do want to, as we always do, to say that we really are talking about childhood trauma tonight. And if anyone is feeling triggered, you know what to do. Turn off, tune out, come back to Aubrey at 9 o'clock, and just take good care of yourself, because we're going to be really getting, I am inviting you all to consider, to think about, without shame, without judgment, as an adult, if any of the tick lists that I'm going to invite you to look at resonates with you. And then we're going to also look at it, you know, are you somebody who is who has that part of you that is so traumatized that it has to impact on your marriage? If we look, and I'm going to again, quote, you know, what is the definition of trauma? And especially developmental trauma disorder, childhood trauma. Mm-hmm. What is that? How? You can't shake it off. It's not Velcro that we take away. Mm-hmm. It brings with it certain parts of us that make it incredibly challenging to feel safe, to be vulnerable, to be intimate, to be in a relationship which requires trust, safety, vulnerability, sexual intimacy. How is it possible to be able to do that if you've come from a home where you've never felt trust, safety, intimacy, contact?
Oh, we keep losing Dr. E.
Held. How can you expect? Oh, good. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to move to another room for beware. I'm hoping the router will work better. So give me a moment. I will carry you with me.
All right. While Dr. Eve tries to get a better connection with us, do you resonate with any of the issues Dr. Eve is raising around some of the traumas that you may have experienced as a child and how they manifest themselves in one way or the other in your adult life, particularly in the relationship that you've established with a loved one in your adult life? Give us a call on 011-883-0702. Dr. Eve says if you haven't had the benefit of trust, of safety, security in your formative years, you probably bring that kind of baggage into your relationship. Are you aware of it? Do you have an understanding between yourself and your beloved as to how you deal with these emotional landmines, if I could call them that? Give us a call on 011-883-0702. Dr. Eve talking to us about childhood trauma and how it impacts your marriage, your committed relationship. You know, I'd love to take those calls. Dr. Eve, are you good?
Yes. I hope you can hear me better now. I've moved quite closer to the router. Are you able to hear me better?
I can hear you loud and clear. Go ahead. Yeah.
Okay. So let's look at what the definition of trauma is, so we're all on the same page once again. There are many definitions. Quoting Bessel van der Kolk, who says trauma by definition is unbearable and intolerable, overwhelming one's ability to cope with what is happening at that moment. And there's a cluster of symptoms and a cluster of conditions which we then use to officially diagnose it. So somebody has been exposed to situations which feel life-threatening. And life-threatening means when I'm in a home where there's violence, I'm witness to it, I'm receiving it, or else I'm being invisible, neglected, I'm being abandoned, I feel abandoned, I feel unseen, I'm put into boarding school, there is so much anxiety in my family that, or one other child is sick or another child has mental health issues, that I am neglected. And what happens to you then is that you don't feel safe any longer. And some of the symptoms you'll have, you could be having nightmares and flashbacks, memories. So let's bring it into the present time of how that would affect an adult. We're focusing on our adult listeners right now. And for these people, for all of us who have had childhood trauma, some of the things that may be experiencing is that everyday events, everyday activities are just much more difficult, if not even impossible. And it sounds like crazy. I was working with somebody very recently who was, and I check in with her all the time, you know, are you able to groom yourself? She goes, oh, you know what? I haven't had a shower for a week. I haven't brushed my teeth for the week as well. That is a result of just everyday activities feel exhausting. Now let's put that person into a relationship. How is the partner managing that? Does the partner understand what's going on? It may be even difficult for that person to really distinguish what's real in the moment. They go to places, they lose memory, they don't have enough sensation or feelings because they disassociate things that have been too difficult, or emotions or reminders that remind them of childhoods that might have been very difficult. Their moods can fluctuate quite a lot. They may even get to a place and at different times, and we'll talk about what those risk times are, when their worlds become very constricted. They socially isolate. There's a lot of negativity. There's a lot of self-confidence that flails and isn't there. There's a feeling of shame. Something is wrong. They need constant reassurance. They feel unlovable. they may have, you know, all the symptoms of PTSD, difficulty concentrating, they're on guard, irritable, aggressive. You know, how do you manage that?
Mm.
And I really want to pose to our listeners, Aubrey, you know, imagine living with someone, and this is now to the partner.
Mm.
Imagine living with somebody who is feeling as if she's, or he, or they are floating in space. They don't have any purpose or direction.
Mm. Not touching ground, as it were, as you say that.
Yeah,
I understand. Yeah. Can I read you this message from a listener, and then take a few calls? By the way, the number is 011-883-0702 or 021-446-0567. Somebody calling themselves police invader. I don't know how you even say that. Says my ex discarded me after a concert. As soon as it got too much emotional, I bought the wrong flowers and touched her neck because she was choked. Her neck. Firstborn, she was never loved as a child. Big sibling family. She threw me out after 4 years. Police investigator. Not completely understandable, Dr. Eve, but I get the essence there is that there was a relationship. It appears that the woman in the relationship had some childhood trauma and it didn't end well. That's the one message coming through. But I want to take some calls on 011-883-0702. Brett is in Pretoria. Good evening to you, Brett.
Good evening. I suffered a birthing trauma and then various incidents of a small nature of traumas and brutalization as a child. And I was diagnosed as schizoaffective, and I've been treated variously for post-traumatic stress disorder of a chronic nature. But what I want to know is it normal for a 54-year-old to recoil from being touched, and to, I've only recently in the last number of years been able to hug somebody or hold somebody, and I've never had sex, and it's very debilitating.
Sure. Dr. Eve?
It's not for want of not having a relationship, it's just for not having anybody to live with or talk to or throw ideas off.
Yeah. Dr. Eve?
It's very isolating.
Yeah. Exactly. Very isolating, very lonely, very depressing. And I can hear, Brett, that there, you know, is eloquence, so there is cognitive functioning and awareness that you do have around the losses. You know, my definition of trauma that I love the best, and you've heard me say this number of times, Aubrey, is not the events that happened to you, but the things that didn't happen to you. So with Brett, it might have been that he didn't receive the love or the attention or the affection or the safety to be able to feel safe gazing and being present with somebody. So there is a freeze response that happens then, a shutdown, which is similar to what actually you're speaking about with the first person whose partner discarded him after the concert. You know, that's an absolute, a flight response. I've got to get up. I've got to get away from this.
Yeah.
So recoiling from touch is a protective response because your body or nervous system tells you, Brett, you know, I don't feel safe with being touched. And I'm happy that you're able to feel a little touch right now. And I recommend, you know, join a dating site. Go and get a massage. That's what I really go get some body work done so you get used to having touch in a neutral professional environment.
Brett, thanks very much for your call, man. Much appreciated. Thank you. Wow. Anonymous writes and says, I think that one creates barriers and walls around oneself that are a protective shield. So when I get into a relationship or an environment where you feel vulnerable, you build these barriers. I've had numerous bouts of trauma to the extent I tried numerous attempts at suicide. When I eventually put my hand up and got much needed help, I can now look back and say thanks to the doctors for allowing me to have a functional life today, says Anonymous. Another Anonymous calls us now on the line. Anonymous, hi.
Hi. So I guess my question is that now that I am aware of this childhood trauma, I'd say my childhood trauma stems from abandonment from my father. And now I'm 27. I've never been in a relationship because I feel like I've never allowed myself the opportunity to be vulnerable because I'm scared. Should I drop down those walls and this person leaves me like my father has when I was a child? What then? And I'm aware of that, but I still cannot allow myself to be vulnerable with someone and like let in a relationship. So I guess, and I'm aware of it, but I don't know what next? What is the next step after this? Yeah.
Great question, Anonymous. Dr. Eve?
Yeah, I love that you have the cognitive understanding, but it's kind of having one insight doesn't get you change behavior. Right?
Sure.
But it starts out with that of just like acknowledging and being very compassionate with yourself, Anonymous, that I recognize there is this part. Remember, it's only one part of you. The abandonment part is a part of you. I'm sure that there are other parts of you that are functional and able to manage in the world. So it is about noticing, working somatically, what I call befriending your nervous system, to be with people, and it can start out with friends, with colleagues, noticing when in my body do I feel the alertness of safety, when, in other words, when I feel I am feeling at ease and comfortable. I had somebody recently, one of my clients, saying, oh, I met this new person, and she's also really guarded. I met this person, and she said, you know, she says, I know what you want to hear from me. She says, and I can tell you right now, my body just eased down and I could settle down into the chair. That's what you're looking for. You're looking for places, people, where your body lets you know, I can ease here. I feel safe. You want to look for safety. And then you will find organically that you will become vulnerable when this person is giving you the length. And we'll talk about, you know, the healing nature of supportive, loving relationships, which is absolutely crucial to healing from trauma. So go slowly with it and just keep noticing what your body tells you feels safe.
Thanks very much for that call, Anonymous. Another Anonymous from Johannesburg. Good evening to you, Anonymous.
Hi, how are you?
Very good, thanks, Anonymous. Go ahead.
I'm going through a situation and I'd like to ask the doctor what solution did she have for me? Because my ex-partner now, we were staying together for more than a year, over a year. He stopped working. I am a student and I was supporting him with everything. I also have a child, but I didn't do much for my child because I had to maintain the household and everything. By the way, I'm 24 and the guy is 40. And he's been going through a lot. He's divorced. He was born with polio, and there's a whole lot of things that has been actually happening in his life. And to the point whereby he started being physical with me. He drinks all the time. By the way, he's not even working. He doesn't care where I get the money from or do anything. But I try and support him and show him that whatever that had happened, we can try and fix it, or maybe, because we cannot fix the past most of the time, can we try and maybe work out something or find solutions? Mm. He's went through a lot of therapies, but nothing has helped to a point where right now I'm in a situation, I'm broke. I don't know where to go. I don't know what to do. He kicked me out. The whole situation is really stressful, and I'm worried for him because we were together and we slept in separate rooms for more than 8 months. He will only be intimate with me when he's drunk. And most of the time when he's drunk, I'm not okay. So what? I'm so sorry.
Anonymous. Hi. Tell me, I hear you and I believe every word that you're saying, and your tears are coming right through to me right here in New York. I hold them with great preciousness. I wish I had time, because the question I would have for you is, tell me what happened to you when you were a child, because something happened to you when you were a child that got you to a place where you feel the need to rescue somebody who's disrespecting you and abusing you and not taking care of you and not creating a safe environment for you. And I want you to know you're not trapped. You're not trapped. And you know, Aubrey, we've had this conversation in different guises over the years, and it's so important for us and all the other people who are listening, especially women, you are not trapped. This is coming from a belief that you developed as a child when maybe you were trapped, because we are trapped as children. We can't get out of abusive or difficult situations. You're now a kick-ass 24-year-old woman. You can get out, in not right now, but you are not trapped. There are other possibilities for you. This is not how you have to live your life. You are not trapped. That's just a message I want to be giving you, that you're in a situation which is very unsafe for you and disrespectful, and it should not be tolerated.
Anonymous, good luck to you, my darling. I really hope that you find the courage to find yourself in this relationship so that you can be in a position to not only look after yourself, but your child as well. Good luck to you. Anonymous in Johannesburg. Whew, Dr. Eve, hey? To what extent do we perhaps, you know, I was just thinking about Brett and the other anonymouses that have called who sound like they are a little bit reticent, a little bit uncomfortable, maybe not even just a little bit, but a lot uncomfortable with intimacy, touch, for example. And first of all, there's the idea that it is, of course, a protective mechanism, because maybe they just don't trust that kind of intimacy to see itself out in the best possible way. Usually, maybe they're afraid of some form of, I don't know, manipulation or exploitation or whatever the case may be. But to what extent is it also a matter of not feeling worthy, not feeling worthy of that kind of intimacy and love and connection because of a traumatic experience in your formative years, that you lived a life of being discarded, rejected and ejected in out of many situations, so that you didn't associate yourself with the luxury of intimate, tender touch, care, intimacy.
Yeah. Think about it. If you are in the person that you are completely reliant on for survival is a parent, and most particularly and most commonly, unfortunately, it is the mother. And if that mother has not, and it is not about parent bashing, how we say that, it's if that person doesn't have capacity or is themselves suffering from their own intergenerational trauma or has anxiety, mental illness, physical illness, depression, addictions, and cannot be fully present for that child suffers such fear of survival and gets into a state of hypervigilance for the rest of their lives. And the brain tells them that I am not safe in any relationship, because if I don't feel, to your point, loved, lovable, special, precious, really embraced, really hugged by the primary caretakers, and it's not a conscious thought, it's the alertness of the brain just to keep you surviving and protected, is to never feel safe in an intimate situation. Mm. And so when, and I just do want to be, to give an experience or some examples, really, of what this other person is experiencing, the partner, just like we're hearing from Anonymous now. If you are in a situation like this, your partner who has experienced some kind of childhood trauma and isn't able to be hugged or be sexual, or isn't able to, or gets into rages, as I spoke on earlier, or uses fight or flight or freeze as responses instead of negotiation and reasoning, because their brain is so on fire, this partner is going to feel rejected from, you know, the emotional withdrawal or the lack of touch or the lack of sexuality. They're frustrated. They don't understand what's happening. They get bewildered by their partner who they love, who's got flashbacks all the time. They even enter a space of grief because the partner isn't able, never mind to get out of bed, but to even dream or create a future together. They resent their partner. And they live in fear that their partner may commit suicide or harm themselves or harm them or their children. So it's not an easy situation for either the person who has been the victim or the survivor of childhood trauma or the person who's living with them. It becomes an extremely difficult situation. And we don't frame it like this, which is why particularly I want for us to frame it within a trauma-informed lens, because we just say, well, we fight a lot.
Yeah,
you know, we just have uncontrolled. We're very volatile with each other. We have explosive rages together. We can't, you know, people come into the therapy room and say, well, we just can't communicate with each other. It's like, what's really going on? Everybody can talk. We all talk and communicate. But why is it that we're not able to be vulnerable, to be present, to be reasonable? Why do we withdraw, detach, depart, run away, tell the other person to pack up and go, have incredible vigilance all the time, not able to hold down a job, not able to manage money? We want to be a little compassionate and say, hey, what's really happened to you? What's really going on with you? Instead of just blaming, shaming, cheating, hurting, physically abusing the other person, because they've had real suffering in their lives and they find it incredibly difficult to heal.
Dr. Eve, I want to ask you a question around something I see a lot in relationships. And I think the second anonymous displayed a little bit of it in that we sometimes are so fixated on rescuing somebody.
Right? Yes.
So fixated on, and the idea is if I love them enough,
yeah,
they'll change. That whole messiah sort of syndrome, that I'm going to save this person from themselves and so forth. And often it doesn't work. Often that person can't change. Often that person... Talk to me about what sort of trauma would have happened to those of us who sometimes find ourselves wanting to be the superhero, to save this abusive person from themselves, to save them from their own addictions and so forth. Talk to me about that.
Yeah, it's a great question. And in fact, anonymous caller, the young woman who called in, she actually said, I try and fix him. I just try and fix it. I tell him, you know, we're going to fix it.
Yep.
So that comes from what's called you call it the rescue part. We call it the people pleaser part. And it comes from a child who sees that the parent is not doing okay, or that there has been infidelity, or as I said earlier, there's anxiety, mental illness, there's distraction. In other words, the child feels unseen. Mm. And the child then will do anything to try and fix the parent or the relationship that between the mother and the father in order to survive. A child will do anything to just survive. And one of the most common tactics is to bring in the people pleasing part. They're going to be, you know, very good. They're going to be the ones who intervene when mom and dad are hitting each other. They're going to be the ones who's never going to raise any difficulties. They'll be very good. They just shut down. They go into their rooms or they run away so that they don't upset mom or dad even more, because it feels so terrifying for them. And they bring that part into their relationship. They will find either wounded birds, you know, birds whose wings are just broken and they need to fix them, where they also can feel in control, like, I can manage this. I will be able to fix this. I'm fine. I'm independent. I don't need any fixing. I'm going to be the one to fix. I can stop him drinking. I can stop him physically choking me. That's from a sense of, I need to be in control. I can fix it. I've done it my whole life. And of course, it's it works when you're a child, because you kind of get out of the war zone a little. You're able to avoid some of your own abuse to yourself. It doesn't work well in intimate relationships. It just doesn't work well. So it's a very strong part that erroneously have or maladaptively bring in.
It's take a call from Anonymous in Johannesburg. Hi, Anonymous.
Good day, Baobri.
Yeah, go for it, man.
Yeah, you know, I struggle going to church because of the hymns that they actually sing there. As a young child, I believe I was maybe 5 years old, mm-hmm. I went to go bury my paternal aunt. Mm-hmm. And while we were there, most of my relatives, when the coffin was going down, they cried so hysterically. And, mm-hmm. you know, that thing really stuck with me, even as an adult of 40 years today. When I go to church and they start singing these hymns and the preacher starts preaching, you know, it gets to a point where I get those flashbacks of that particular funeral where those cries were just so ingrained in my mind that they always come back every time, you know, they start singing those hymns. I'd like to know, how can I get over it? Especially because sometimes you need church, especially when you're going through the most, you know. How do you overcome that and be able to face, you know, the prospect of those hymns actually triggering you, but being able to be okay at the end of the day?
Interesting your question, Anonymous, because, and maybe you can help me out here, Dr. Eve, that in Anonymous's situation, it's not the impact on a relationship, in other words, a romantic relationship in adult life, but an impact with an essential part of his socialization, culture, and faith, as a result of something that happened in his formative years, in his youth. Talk to us about that.
Yeah, I love it that there is this impact on spirituality, I think we've done a show on the trauma of religion, but there is that, I hear it. So Anonymous, what happened to you? And maybe you can kind of flash back to when you were 5 years old and you saw your whole family crying hysterically. Do you remember what that felt like for you?
It felt like despair because, you know, my family was my refuge back then. I was still so young, and they were the ones I would actually turn to whenever the situation got maybe difficult. But now having to see them lose control like that and start crying, I felt like now I have no one else to turn to because now they are losing it themselves, you know?
Amazing. Oh, it's fantastic. You've just given us such a beautiful insight into trauma. How terrifying is this for you? That feeling, and you describe it as despair. My family is my refuge. And seeing your family, what in your mind as a 5 year old was losing control, which put incredible terror into your heart of feeling I'm going to be alone. There's nobody to turn to. You know, there's no refuge for me anymore. And that memory of that feeling is what triggers you every time you hear that hymn. You have this feeling of I'm going to be abandoned. I feel despairing. So what you do when you go into church and you hear that hymn, use your breath, plant your feet on the ground and remind yourself that you're not 5 years old and that that happened back then. And right now you're an independent man and you have an ability to obviously take care of yourself and that you're okay. You're okay.
Anonymous, thanks very much for your question. Much appreciated. Mfundo is in Pretoria. Hi, Mfundo.
Hi, bro.
Yeah, go ahead, Mfundo.
Topic. I wasn't there.
Ooh, we're losing Mfundo.
Find out from...
If you can just move around a little bit, Mfundo, and then ask your question, my brother.
Yes, can you hear me now?
Yes.
I wasn't on the program when it started, but you guys are talking about certain behaviors that can reflect what happened in the past. I would like to know, how does a condition called ADHD feature in these things, especially among others, because it's one of the most underdiagnosed conditions in adults, but it does disrupt your life in relationships, in work, and elsewhere. How does it temper with relationships in this regard?
Vunda, thanks very much for your great question, man. Yep, go ahead, Dr. Eve.
I would just love to know from him, from Mfundo himself, of how it has taken for granted, maybe I shouldn't, how that you've been diagnosed with adult ADHD. How is this disrupting your intimate relationships or your ability to have relationships in your work? If you can briefly tell us that.
I'm still there.
Yes, we hear.
I'm actually not in that space of being in that condition, but I'm a pediatrician, and I've seen this diagnosis of parents of my patients, and the history that I often get is that in relationships, they're usually a mess. There's a lot that goes wrong, and if it is not treated, it remains a problem for a very, very long time for the other significant partners in their lives.
Yeah.
Amazing. You know, you're in the most fantastic position. I hope that you listen to us all the time to be able to work with trauma that you see in symptoms in children. You're in such a fantastic position to really do such, you know, trauma-informed work. ADHD is quite controversial, depending on who you listen to or what research you're going to be following. There are, you know, biological markers that will say that people do have a genetic proclivity towards ADHD. And then there is a school of thought which says that ADHD really is as a result of childhood trauma. So you may want to dig a little deeper into your parents and see there probably is a little bit of trauma that has then brought them a lack of attention, attention deficit and hyperactivity disorder because of nervous system dysregulation. And there's no doubt that those children that are coming to you have got symptoms. They're symptomatic because of what's going on with the adults. So I really appreciate your awareness of the adults and send them off to therapy. You know, you've got to do that. You've got to take care of your children by sending parents off to therapy because the children are going to be diagnosed with ADHD because they've got parents who are dysregulated. So, Go and do the good work.
Yeah.
Sounds like you're doing it.
Yeah, yeah. Dikeledi Waka Malebie on Twitter says, good evening, Bra Ops and Dr. Eve. I've dated a guy who had a lot of anger due to childhood trauma. Despite how many times I tried to engage him, he refused to go to therapy. So I decided to run for my life. A couple of years down the line, he committed suicide, says Dikeledi. Talking about a past relationship with somebody who had childhood trauma, Dr. Eve.
Goodness, that's absolutely tragic. It's interesting that you noticed that the anger didn't make you feel safe and that you did recommend therapy. Of course, therapy is something which is terrifying for many people and they don't do it. And it just isn't going to always be the solution and prevention of suicide. I'm sorry for you that your life has been touched by this and also pleased that you were able to take care of yourself and notice that you were not feeling safe with this anger.
Sipo says, Braobs, what about us? Those who took the time to work on themselves, for example, seek counseling for past traumas. Recently, I've been trying to hook up or find a person to date. I've been meeting people who are deeply hurt from their past experiences frequently, either love or family related. These individuals are guarded or not vulnerable, as your guest mentioned, to people who have such issues of trauma. I, as an individual who has healed themselves, seem strange or too good to be true of a person with intentions for a potential relationship in their eyes. I've taken a decision to stop looking because maybe I'm the problem. Maybe my approach is the problem. Can you ask your guest as to what can be the problem here? And that is from Sipo in Johannesburg.
Yeah, it's a common situation when one has been healed or when the healing is ongoing and there is an awareness, you're not feeling safe because it can shut you down and it also can trigger some of your trauma again, being with people who are not, haven't processed and are living their trauma through the relationship. Don't shut down that part of yourself and don't be self-judgmental around it. That's what always worries me, Aubrey, when people go down that rabbit hole of like, there's something wrong with me, I'm unlovable. All those old belief systems kick in again. What did I do wrong? I can't have a partner. I must be doing something wrong. Stay in your truth. Stay in your power. And you will find people. The more you stay in your power and your truth, you will be attracting people who are able to be safe in themselves or do the work themselves and heal through wonderful partnership, right? That's what we want. We want to heal through partnership.
Dr. Eve, as always, thank you very much for yet another courageous conversation. How do people get in touch with you?
just on all my social media platforms, or you can come meet me in New York and we can have a coffee.
Thank you so much, Dr. Eve. Much appreciated.